a rather definitely mathematical, almost diagrammatic way in which our ancient forebears developed their concepts of astroanalysis is of very definite interest to us now, because it may form an important part of the future study of psychology. Many things that do not seem probable at a given time become more probable as our knowledge enlarges and our tolerance broadens. The general psychology as we have it is very close to astrology in many of its techniques even now. And the similarity is almost certain to improve with years. The ancients evolved a system of basic concepts as to the use and abuse of sidereal energy. Also, the ancients perhaps were among the first to recognize the universe as our principal conditioning environment. We cannot escape entirely the influence of the way of life in which we exist as creatures. This way of life was not devised by us, but constitutes a vast universal background within which we carry on our own assorted projects. We are therefore creatures possessing a measure of individuality, continually using and abusing energies. The natural use of energy is always to affect normalcy, to result in an harmonious adjustment between the individual and his world. The abuse of energy always threatens this harmonious adjustment. And when this adjustment is at part, at least, destroyed, the person himself suffers from the consequences. This suffering, of course, extends beyond the individual and may very often become world problem. Problem is always the result of the lack of harmonious use of energies. This lack may arise from ignorance, in which the human being simply does not know how to use energies that are vastly beyond his own comprehension. The second cause of trouble is a calculated effort to exploit or pervert energies, as we find in individuals who have permitted selfishness and other faults to dominate their conduct. Where we are unable to cope with energy because we do not understand it, we proceed by way of trial and error. We attempt various experiments with life. This experimentation has been going on since the dawn of time. And from these experiments, we learn certain useful facts. We learn to a measure, at least, what we can do and what we cannot do safely. We realize that certain causes inevitably produce consistent results. And wherever we find that a cause produces a detrimental result, or a result which is not harmonious with our security and well-being, we make note of this. And from the note so taken, we have developed a variety of beliefs and opinions. Inasmuch as the vast collective in which we exist has anciently been regarded as a divine structure, and the mysterious laws governing it have been regarded as the will of God, it became obvious to primitive people, strongly religious in their inclinations, that the universe was constantly attempting to teach us something, and that this revelation was the revealing of the will of God for creatures. From this revelation of the divine will, we are reasonably certain that most of our scriptural writings originated. They came from persons who were inwardly illumined to the degree that they apprehended or understood certain operations of natural law which were not obvious to the average semi-informed person. From the same contemplation, philosophy gathered most of its ethical structure, its recognition of right and wrong, its ability to formulate codes, political, cultural, ethical, for the improvement of society and the perpetuation of worthy and proper institutions. From this same general reservoir of observation and reflection came also the beginnings of science, the recognition of those laws with which man must cooperate, laws which also continually invite an improvement, an enlargement of human empire. Thus, from primitive observation, perhaps on the fields of Babylon long ago, Western man gained his point of view. He also learned, as he went along, that this point of view was not imaginary. It was not merely something he had conjured up out of his own imagination. This point of view was rooted and grounded in real observational knowledge. It proved itself again and again, and wherever man attempted to deviate from these basic courses, he found himself in trouble. All of this forms together a kind of world psychological science, a science of the understanding of the principles operating the life forces with which we exist. And in the effort to understand these forces, man turned not only to the vast universe around him, but to the smaller universe within him. He became convinced in his own way that his body was a kind of miniature of this universal pattern, that through the study of his own parts and functions, through a gradual analysis of his own nature and character, he was able also to arrive at useful knowledge, factual knowledge, suitable to assist him in the perpetuating of his own purposes, especially if these purposes were worthy and proper. Man therefore learned that his body has its laws, that these laws depend very largely upon the larger pattern which is their source, but that universal procedure is continuously operating in human life, and that man himself must keep the same rules within his nature that he must obey in the larger world about him. Naturally, all human beings desire health and happiness. And out of a study of nature, man has discovered something about the laws ruling health and happiness. He learned, first of all, that for him, a happy, healthy condition must arise from obedience. He must keep rules. He must discipline himself against the natural instinct and tendency to regard himself as a completely free and ungoverned creature. He must also be aware that self-government itself is not sufficient unless this self-government is rooted in an understanding of universal law. Therefore, man must experience self-government as a voluntary obedience with the rules of his kind. For if he disobeys these rules, regardless of his motives, certain disasters will result. The most common disasters that we know are misery and sickness. Misery being largely an emotional-mental problem, in which the individual becomes culturally ill. Pain or sickness represents interference with the normal function of physical law. We observe that certain inharmonies arise within the body. Unless these are corrected, the body must suffer. And we have come to know, finally, that the body cannot be merely exploited by its owner. The body is not merely here to permit the individual to do as he pleases. It is here to permit him to function normally if he does as he must or as he should, or as intelligence indicates would be desirable for him. Out of this series of observations, our primitive ancestors in medicine, particularly, came to the conclusion that health arises from an harmonious use of energies. That health, in order to be maintained, must have beneath it an enlightened purpose in conduct. Health must be watchfully guarded. It must be cultivated as the natural and proper state of man. Health is not extraordinary. Health is ordinary. It is the common proper state of things, that in the various periods of their living, they shall fulfill these periods constructively, and that at the different stages of life, there are different levels of health to which each individual can aspire, and which he can attain in most instances through understanding and obedience. Now, this does not mean that man is as yet possessed with an infallible guide by means of which he can in all things move correctly. There are forces around him and within him which he yet does not know, and which will continue to present him with problems. These problems are invitations for further thoughtfulness in order that he may gradually conquer the unknown and apply his newly made discoveries to the security of his own existence and the way of life for those around him. This is, in a sense, a summary of astrological philosophy. And while it may be derived from unorthodox sources, I believe that we will ultimately learn that it is essentially true, reasonable, and proper. In fact, perhaps more of common sense than that which now passes for scientific exactitude. So this morning we want to bring out a series of points which we think will be helpful to individuals now, in order that something may be done to combat the consistently increasing dis-ease with which individuals are afflicted. Now, if this morning we do not make a series of wonderful, optimistic remarks about all the different signs and their peoples, please forgive me. We are not here this morning to say how wonderful we are. Everyone knows that already. We are fully aware of our achievements and our accomplishments. What we are looking for at the moment is weakness. We are looking for our mistakes, in order, if possible, to correct them. We are looking for the things we do not do well, the infirmities and misfortunes which burden us. These constitute our problems, and our problems represent achievements yet to be made, whereas our comforts and conveniences perhaps bear witness to the adjustments we have already accomplished. Therefore, let us say in this way, that in astrology, each person born within a certain complex of time and place is endowed with conditioned energies. These energies represent an inheritance. And just as the individual may inherit means, or wealth, or property, or chattel, so he may inherit tendencies, qualities, attributes, aspects of character. Now, when we think of inheriting, we think very largely, really, of the donation of our forebears, which may become the heaviest burden we have to carry. But our inheritance is also from space. Our inheritance is from some deep root of consciousness within ourselves, which lies beyond the ordinary gifts and legacies. We have all inherited a place and a time in existence. And in this place and time, we must work out the patterns of our own potential. In order to do this as effectively as possible, we must be aware that there are rules. We must know what we can about these rules. And we must try to apply them to the personal situations that affect ourselves. It is, of course, not unreasonable to assume that most persons know they live in a world governed by law. We are aware of this intellectually. We are not fully aware of it emotionally. And we are seldom aware of it when it interferes immediately with our ambitions or desires. Thus, although we accept certain principles, we do not apply them. We do not live according to the laws we recognize as real. We do not live according to the laws of God or of nature, and we resent rather heartily the laws of man. These resentments, this attempt, particularly on the part of certain modern materialistic and anarchistic philosophies, this tendency to rebel against that which is proper, reasonable, and for man inevitable, is measured in terms of discomfort, in harmony, and suffering. So we start with one rather simple and obvious rule, that if we are not a secure, happy, adjusted, and reasonably healthy person, there is room for improvement. Now, this room for improvement is a challenge. And wherever the individual is not able to function in a reasonable manner, is not able to control his own instincts and appetites to a reasonable degree, where we observe this lack of reasonable control, we know we are in the presence of the principal cause of trouble, and that the trouble will continue until this control is finally discovered, recognized, and applied. To control an energy is often difficult, for the reason that the energy arises within ourselves. We are not able always to identify it. We are not able to tell when it will suddenly emerge. We are not able always to anticipate the pressures and tensions which will accompany it. Thus, many of these experiences come upon us unawares. And before we realize what has happened, we have already made several unfortunate decisions. In the Western way of life, one of our reasons for trouble is our haste. We allow nothing to mature. We are not a contemplative people. We do not sit down quietly with ourselves. We do not have enough inner communion with our own natures to be able to say to our various pressures, "Be still." We are their victim. They come upon us while we are under other pressures. And in this complex of tensions, new elements are introduced so suddenly and sometimes so dramatically that we are unable to cope with them. One of the first problems, then, is to attempt to prevent the exceptional or extraordinary pressure from arising. We can do this usually by permitting ourselves a greater degree of personal relaxation. Relaxation does not mean laziness. It does not mean that the individual sits around with his hands folded, nor does it necessarily imply that he must get away somewhere into the mountains or the valleys and rest in the sun. Rest and relaxation are not identical things, although relaxation removes most of the need for rest as we know it. Actually, relaxation means to perform the various functions of life without tension, with a minimum of pressure. For the habit of pressure rapidly gets out of control. Once we become accustomed to doing things pressurefully, we lose the ability to do them graciously. Wherever pressure arises, there is danger. Just as the increasing pressure in a boiler may cause it to explode, so the increasing pressure in man's nervous system can cause illness. We observe today a constantly mounting pressure. The individual is responding more pressurefully to the circumstances around him than at any other time in history. To meet this requires a certain amount of conscious effort. We must resolve within ourselves to relax pressure, to achieve what we can achieve without this tremendous sense of tension. We may feel that pressure hastens results, that without this pressure, things would take too long to happen. Actually, pressure does not hasten any constructive result. Pressure puts too much tension upon the body. It puts too much wear and tear upon the nervous system. Pressure is like whipping a horse carrying a heavy load. The horse may be able to struggle on more rapidly for a few feet, and then it drops dead. There is no solutional result to be gained by whipping the body, the mind, or the emotions in the effort to accomplish some particular unit of business or other activity. Some signs of the zodiac are more pressureful than others. Some reveal their pressures more immediately. Some extrovert their pressures rapidly. Others build up a tremendous amount of internal tension. And this is perhaps the most dangerous that we have to face. Internal tension, however, is not limited entirely to a type of person. Internal tension is a defense that can arise in all types of individuals under certain types of intensity. Up to a period of, say, 50 years ago, your extrovert and your introvert were two very clearly distinguished groups. The extrovert was simply a natural person who exhibited his feelings intensely and obviously. The introvert was an individual who naturally concealed his feelings. Out of timidity, out of reticence, out of some form of humility or modesty, or perhaps more dramatically, out of fear itself. Today, however, introversion is becoming an artificial habit in the lives of people originally untouched by it. We are all becoming more introverted because of the apparent hopelessness of the environmental situation. We find more and more difficulty in extroverting reasonably. It appears that we are living in a world moving so rapidly and under such tremendous compulsions that there is very little to be gained by coming out saying anything, doing anything, or being anything. Thus, we have a tendency to fall back into introversion, even though we may not be what was originally termed an introverted type. Introversion may result from discouragement as to the ability of the individual to cope with any physical or environmental circumstance. Being hopeless and sensing helplessness, the person may simply retire into himself, carrying a greater and greater amount of internal load, locked in a greater and greater degree of internal intensity. Obviously, the more this intensity builds up, the more dangerous it becomes. The more mechanically organized, the more industrialized and standardized a culture becomes, the more difficult it is for the individual to find self-expression. Lack of self-expression contributes to frustration. Where the person can make a useful contribution to a way of life, he has every incentive to be useful. Where his contribution is neither recognized nor accepted, he gradually becomes discouraged, therefore falls back into himself, building defenses or escapes according to his natural attributes. Today, our large defense mechanism, of course, is the magnitude of world affairs. Our escape is into trivia, into any form of unreasonable activity which seemingly gives relief for the moment. Thus, the boundary lines of types are not as clear as they used to be. More and more persons are involved in large patterns over which they cannot exercise adequate management. They are more and more victims of situations apparently beyond control. This requires a new ordering, a philosophic ordering of life. The ability of the person to recognize the dignity and significance of the integration of himself. That where we cannot change other things, we still have the privilege of improving self. We have an opportunity to learn rapidly the importance of a sufficient internal life. A life that is made rich without the necessity for visible attainments. a life that is purposeful, even in a society which may not recognize the purposes with which we are most concerned. The result of a purposeful organization of ourselves is that we do become an increasingly powerful minority of integrated persons whose opinions, attitudes, and achievements are available to society when society is willing to accept them. And also, we have then a voice which we can use increasingly for the good of the group. We become less likely to be moved by propaganda and common prejudices. We are not so quickly affected by negative circumstances. And as a result, we do not panic. And where emotions of panic diminish in society, many of the mistakes of society will in this way be corrected. Even today, we observe the detrimental result of panic, of mania of masses, of groups of persons moved by propaganda or other forces to excesses not natural to them. These situations must gradually be brought under control. Thus, we have in astrology not only a key to a world pattern, we also have a useful text for the integration of our own natures. And it is on this level that we wish to particularly approach the subject at this time. The person is able, if he so exercises his abilities and capacities, to direct his own life, to correct those faults within him which are obviously contributing to his troubles, and also to develop new and positive values which will contribute to new and positive solutions of problems. A problem person, to a degree at least, is an impoverished one. A person with problems is usually a person who has not much else but problem. He does not have an adequate allotment of values which are not problems. He is not able to turn from his problem thinking to other constructive, well-organized areas of mental-emotional activity. Working with people, I have observed that the person in trouble is usually a person who has not built much of anything but trouble. He has not recognized the possibility of a rich and valuable personal life. He has not given himself adequate mental and emotional outlets of a constructive nature. He is not interested in enough good to overcome the pressure of misfortune when it arises. Here we have the same problem that confronts the man retiring from business. If at the age of retirement he has not built sufficient interests, his health will most naturally decline. If, however, his retirement is a new door opening into a well-planned future, he's very likely to break the insurance statistics and collect his funds much longer than he would otherwise. Many persons have considered this an end in itself and have felt that the longer they lived, the more completely they revenged themselves against insurance probabilities. It's a rather negative approach, but it's better than nothing. Each sign has certain tensions or tendencies which may have an effect upon life. Now, we cannot go into all of the machinery of astrology at this time. We have to hope that you will have at least a broad concept of what we are talking about without going into every harrowing detail. But we do know, for example, that the signs of the zodiac are divided into two groups, which are called positive and negative. The positive signs being those of odd number, the first, third, fifth, seventh, ninth, 11th signs. The negative or receptive signs are the even numbers, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, and 12. Therefore, in working with people, we have observed that the positive signs constitute the easiest polarities for the male human being. And the negative signs, so-called, or passive signs, the best polarities for the feminine being. This means that actually positive and negative, as conceived in China, were not to be termed merely good and bad, but positive being the sign of aggression or the outmoving of qualities and values, and the passive signs having more to do with the internal, intuitive, inspirational, emotional, psychical phases of experience. Therefore, a man who is born under a positive sign naturally receives a certain cooperation of energy. The sign is most appropriate to his obvious existence. A man, however, born under a negative or feminine sign has already here a certain type of conflict. Now, this conflict may not be in any sense bad. Nature does not create bad. Nature, however, does demand more where it presents opportunities demanding greater adjustment. As in the case of the man, so with the woman. A woman born under a masculine sign or a positive sign has greater difficulty balancing her own femininity. And unfortunately, when either the masculine or the feminine polarities are off balance, this unbalance is not an attainment or achievement. It is a liability. It is a difficulty that has to be faced. In order to understand this situation, then, we have to realize that the man who is hypersensitive, being born under a feminine sign, intuitional, more or less internal in his thinking, more or less positive in his emotional reflexes, subject, therefore, to a certain negativity of outward personality, has greater difficulty getting along, either with men or with women. The woman on the opposite polarity, born under a masculine sign, presents more drive than is natural or normal to her kind, is less adaptable and adjustable, less able to complement someone else in marriage, less able to quickly and immediately assume the maternal role in motherhood, less willing to permit her children to grow up, but continuing a positive, dominant attitude over them. This type of woman may succeed better in business, but may pay for this achievement in terms of psychic peace of mind. Thus, wherever we have these cross polarities, we also have the beginning of a kind of tension. We have not anything wrong, because actually the consciousness of man is androgene. The psychic life is both male and female. But when this psychic life moves through a body of the opposing polarities, the body and its pressures, its temperament, and its tensions make it more difficult for that person to function harmoniously. The object intended is, of course, obvious. Nature is not so much interested in the happiness of means as it is in the dignity of ends. And therefore, nature is working for a very definite purpose, namely to gradually diminish these opposites, to cause the individuals involved to become more aware of the psychic polarities of each other. For it is only through these inner experiences that this mysterious interval between the sexes can ultimately be psychologically bridged. As long as the two polarities remain totally distinct, they may harmonize a little better in physical activity, but their mutual understanding is not enriched. Nature is working for this enrichment, and therefore is constantly placing individuals in positions and conditions in which they become more and more aware of the function of opposite polarities, this awareness arising within their own consciousness as a result of this situation that I have mentioned. So here we have one of our problems in psychology. The hypersensitive man and the materially, intellectually aggressive woman. Now, both of these situations have tremendous values. Actually, your highly sensitive man has given us our world of arts in a very large degree. It was the sensitiveness of Michelangelo or Leonardo da Vinci or the great Raphael that was represented in the tremendous artistic achievement which these men contributed to society. It is the mysterious, sensitive, almost maternal dedication to the needs of other persons that has transformed Albert Schweitzer into a world hero. If he had been a true, rugged, masculine intellectual, he would not have done what he did. On the other side of the ledger, we realize the tremendous contribution coming into society through the scientifically trained woman, the philosophically trained woman, who is able to bring her emotional life into a more dominant place in world affairs, where the tremendous contribution of the psychic and intuitive polarities can become useful in the management of world pressures and tensions. The balance to be attained is well worth the price. But in the transition, both types pass through growing pains, which are very uncomfortable, represented by confusion in character balance. This confusion can also be largely helped if the individual understands himself better, understands the reasons for the experiences through which he is passing. Now, in a brief way, in the length of time that we have, we want to suggest certain general points to persons born under the different signs of the zodiac. We must remember, however, that we are not working from properly calculated nativities. Therefore, it is quite possible for any single individual to be an exception to the patterns we point out. We do not expect these patterns to fill completely. We do not expect every individual to recognize himself in these patterns. But at the same time, from a more or less empiric point of view, these patterns are still usually operating to some degree, although this operation may be modified in any particular instance. The pressures themselves are classical. They are almost certain to appear in some way. And it often becomes helpful if the person, knowing himself better than anyone else can ever know him, takes over certain keynotes and tries to explore his own personality to discover how these principles are operating in him. Instead of simply saying they are or they are not, it is better to estimate the degree to which they may be present in an effort to learn something that is useful to our own needs. We all have pressures, or we would not be seeking knowledge. We are all to a measure insecure, or we would not be questing in religion and philosophy for sources of personal integration. So there has to be some reason why we are in this world. And we are in this world largely because we are not quite good enough to leave it. And here we will remain until we improve the situation. The first of our zodiacal signs, of course, is Aries, extending approximately from the 20th of March to the 20th of April. Now, we know that sometimes it's the 21st and sometimes it's the 22nd, but for round figures, let us make some kind of a general statement. And where you are born between the 18th and the 22nd or 3rd of a month, consider both the preceding and following suggestions, because they may be present to some degree as a compound. And persons under compound pressures of this nature also exhibit a new kind of mixed tensions, which are often quite interesting to the observer and not quite so interesting to the proud owner thereof. Aries I will in each instance indicate whether the sign be a masculine or feminine sign, as this may help in the person estimating from what we previously said concerning the mixed psychic pressures. Aries is a masculine sign, and generally speaking is a sign which bestows a considerable amount of basic energy. There is probably no sign in which energy needs less definition. It is itself. It is a tremendous energy power. And one of the things that this energy likes to do in the Aries person is work. It's too bad we haven't more under the sign, because there's a lot of the world's work that isn't getting done. But the Aries person is active. And where this activity is frustrated or thwarted, where they are unable to be constructively busy, we begin to find a little psychic pressure mounting within them. Also, this sign is a lover of the open spaces for the most part. They like large areas of activity. Some Aries people will become very neurotic if nailed to a desk every day. They are most suitable for outdoor activities or activities carrying a maximum of variety and change. They like activity usually that is a combination of mental-physical activity. They do not like to do just mental work. They want to get their hands at something. They want to construct or to build. Nature has often endowed them with a pretty rugged constitution. And they like to be up and at it. An activity can sometimes get out of hand with these people. In their effort to be continually active, they may overstrain their resources, particularly as they grow older, for they find it difficult to adjust with limitations of strength or health. Normally speaking, without too much tension arising from conflict, these people hold their health and hold their energies rather better than a number of the other signs. They are often stronger and more enduring in older years than some of the other astrological groups. Now, Aries also has an interesting and wonderful ability to retire into a kind of inner quietude. In the advanced Aries, this means that the individual simply is able to build a rich inner life. With the less advanced type, the Aries under tension is very apt to go to sleep. This tension does not, therefore, do the damage that it might in a good many of the other signs. Very often these people can almost sleep standing up. I know one Aries who is exceedingly adroit at this problem. They are able to sleep beautifully and peacefully while other people are talking to them. Now, this is more or less of an achievement, and it is magnified in the one case I mentioned by the extraordinary fact that this person can sleep with a look of tremendous intelligence on their faces and with their eyes open. Now, unless they are suddenly addressed directly, no one even notices that they are asleep. This is a very helpful receptivity. Many Aries persons have, by their peculiar strength, drawn to themselves heavy problems. They have drawn long-range loads to be carried. Some of these loads are pretty difficult, but the Aries person has a jaunty way of carrying them that is almost unbelievable. It is because in an emergency the Aries person can simply relax almost without trying. All this helps in many ways, but because of their natural activity in life, the sign is subject to accidents. It is subject to long, enduring difficulties arising from accident or injury. This may mean that it must carry with it through the years some at least minor physical problem that is not going to clear up entirely. Even so, this is carried with an amazing degree of fortitude. The people are patient but active. They are perfectly willing to permit energy to be used now. At the same time, they can and do project long-range plans. The Aries person is at a great disadvantage if they develop insomnia. Therefore, it is quite important for them to watch their sleep and to watch their ability to relax when they are not engaged in activity.